This is the one with deadly teachers in a school.
There are some intelligence-boosting potato products.
Mickey Smith returns, along with yet another tin dog.
And we have the return of Sarah Jane Smith. No relation.
It's called School Reunion.
Here we go.
We're still on our endless voyage, all through time and all through space.
With Levine and Angels now, Dalek, Soilers, Zandun, wow!
Tennant, Smith and Eccleston, Gallifrey, where it all began.
Doctor Who is cool again, that was Russell's master plan.
Who back when? Reviewing all new Who there is. Who back when?
Subscribe and rate on iTunes, please.
Rose and Donna, Amy Pond, Rory, Martha and beyond. Join us on this odyssey, what other choice could there be than who back when? Who back when?
Shazam, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of Who Back When, a Doctor Who podcast. I am Ponkin. And who are you again?
I'm JD.
Yes, you are. And today we are reviewing N017 School Reunion. Holy moly, it is a romp. And it's just a trip down memory lane.
To say this is better than the last episode is doing it a disservice.
It is, yeah. And by the way, if you haven't listened to the last episode, the last review, where we tore tooth and claw a new one, we recorded that just a moment ago. I'm now on my second pint of GNT. I apologize if at some point I kind of zone out.
Shall we just jump into B-Scow then?
Oh my god, let's do it.
The Doctor and Rose get jobs at Deffry Vale High School, having been brought back to Earth by Mickey Smith, who wanted to check up on his on-off-on-off-on girlfriend, and also he's been investigating UFO and strange occurrences in the area.
Also investigating these occurrences is journalist and former companion of the Doctor, Sarah Jane Smith, who doesn't recognise the regenerated Doctor until she finds a TARDIS, and she and K-9 are once more embroiled in a mystery with the Doctor.
Some alien bat changeling creatures are trying to solve a mathematical equation that can take over all of space and time, and it's up to the Doctor, his companions, both old and new, and two rather special tin dogs to save the day.
B-Scout over, you are welcome. Wow, that really neatly sums it up, I think.
We start off with a scene-setting exercise where a girl who's an orphan, little orphan Annie,
topical,
is taken into the headmaster's office and eaten. Thus setting...
In a non-sexual way, I think.
Thus setting up the headmaster being quite evil.
Yeah, who plays the headmaster, dude?
Oh, Anthony Stewart Head.
Oh my goodness, the Watcher himself.
Giles from Buffy, who has a prior Doctor Who experience.
Wait, what? He does? Do tell.
Well, not only does he narrate Doctor Who Confidential.
Okay.
He was in the big Finnish audiobooks called Excelsis.
Okay.
And he was in the BBC radio play Death Comes to Time, which was a Doctor Who.
Oh, wow. Very cool. How does that fit in? Wait, hang on. A BBC radio teleplay. That's not a big Finnish production.
No. I'm not actually sure the date it was. It was a Seventh Doctor one.
Yeah.
And it was at the time, it came before Paul McGann.
Okay.
So it was a BBC radio drama that they did. It was a five-parter.
Nice.
I can't remember what year it was, but it was... Sorry, yeah, it came before the big Finnish audiobooks, I believe.
All right.
I think it was quite early on.
Yeah, clearly prolific in the world of Who.
But there was a lot of people in Death Comes to Time who are quite famous from a, you know, sort of like cult television or just famous people in general.
Okay.
Stephen Fry was in it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that he had any affiliation with Who.
Yeah. As was Supreme Commander Servalan from Blake 7, Jacqueline Pierce.
Blake's. All roads lead to Blake's.
All roads do lead to Blake. And it was a special guest appearance by none other than Nick Courtney as Brigadier Lethbridge Stewart as well.
Oh, my God. Nick Courtney.
Yeah.
Oh, well, that does it for me. How can we possibly top that? Episode over, guys.
Well, sadly,
not quite.
We can top it by the fact that of what happens in about 5 minutes.
Yes, that's true. Okay, so we are in the school, blah, 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 opening title sequence, Shazam, and we find out that the Doctor and Rose have already infiltrated and are basically undercover. The Doctor is playing a teacher, John Smith. This is not the first time that he's used the John Smith alias, I think, in New Who.
No, and he's used this dozens of times. times.
Yeah, going forward, yeah, he uses it all the time. When was the first time they used John Smith?
In Doctor Who?
Yeah, go for that. Classic first.
John Pertwee's Doctor used to use it a lot of the time.
Okay.
That was probably the most common one. He uses it in New Who in both this, Smith and Jones. I'm trying to think of the earliest time he's used it. I know that the first time he used it was in Troughton era.
Oh, wow. Going back that far. I didn't realise.
I think it was someone asked Jamie who the person was, and Jamie just picked a name out of thin air, and he's used it ever since.
Oh, cool.
The third Doctor used it a lot when he was on Earth.
Okay.
And he tends to use it when, you know, when he's in Germany, when he was in World War II, mm-hmm. which happened a lot in the audiobooks for the seventh Doctor. He calls himself Johann Schmidt, John Smith in German.
Yeah. Perfect equivalent.
And I think this was the first time in Europe, but I'm not sure.
Okay, cool. All right. Awesome. Anyway, so he's portraying John Smith. He is a teacher, a physics teacher in particular. And Rose, meanwhile, she's a cafeteria lady, which is pretty cool. And we open on their undercover roles here with the Doctor in class asking some pretty advanced physics questions of his pupils.
And obviously none of his pupils know what the hell's going on, but one.
Yeah.
Milo.
Yeah, I've got a question for you, dude.
Already?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I've got a question for you. I'm assuming that all of our listeners have already watched this episode. They know what we're talking about, right? So they know what's going on.
If you have not watched this episode, turn us off right now. Go and watch it, because you need to watch the episode.
Yeah, this is an important one in the canon of Who.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. If you don't want to, that's okay. I'm not going to judge you, but you will be turning me off in a different way. Anyway, so
no,
he's...
No. I will be judging.
Fair enough. All right, fine. JD will judge you. I will just be turned off. Anyway, we know that all of the students are being manipulated to have, like, just expanded brain power, right? Like, they are all super-duper clever. They're very well-behaved. They're, like, just their model students, all of them, except for one dude who's, like, the chubby kid, and he's on a diet. He's not eating the chips. Spoiler alert, it turns out whatever's making them really smart is in the chips. However, why, in that case, is only one of his physics students able to answer all these questions? Shouldn't all of those students be able to answer the questions except for the fat guy?
It seems like the chips only last for a certain amount of time. Milo probably has been eating more than his fair share of the chips.
I think you're reaching, but that's okay. I respect that. Anyway, he's asking all these questions, the Doc is. He's asking all these questions. Something is clearly wrong because this kid knows stuff that he shouldn't know. Cut to Rose.
Rose is in the canteen and she's eating chips. And watching this entire scene is Anthony Stewart Head. Giles is standing on the balcony looking evil.
Yeah, we can just go with Giles from this point on.
Yeah, Giles looks evil. He spends the entire episode being evil.
So he's watching them. Is that what he's doing? What does that make him? Does that make him like a watcher?
It does, yes.
Yeah.
At this point, when we were sort of watching this and having sort of had the return last season of the Dalek Emperor, we thought this season they'd have another returning villain, and we were hoping this was the Master. We were hoping Anthony Stewart Head was going to come in and play the Master, because that would have been perfect.
Oh, nice one. I remember seeing this the first time around, whenever it was, 2006, but I similarly remember not having made that connection at the time.
Because he'd make perfect one.
He would be a great master. He's the right age, in my opinion.
Yes, and don't get me wrong, our current master, and no spoilers for those that haven't seen Capaldi.
Jesus Christ, people, what are you doing with your lives? Yeah. Watch it.
Our current master is superb.
Yeah, she's fantastic. Oh shit, I just spoiled it. She is fantastic, don't get me wrong. And I liked, what's his face, the young master? What's his name? The next one in line?
Oh, John Sim.
John Sim, that's his name. I really liked him as well. I thought he was great, but I prefer a master to be slightly older.
And Anthony Stewart Head fits that bill, so...
Yeah. Anyway, yeah, let's go on.
Rose goes back to the kitchens, and basically she sees one of the other dinner ladies get...
Like, sprayed.
Sprayed with oil and really, really, really badly burned.
Yeah, but this is so cartoonish, dude.
Oh, yeah.
All these dinner ladies, except for Rose, they literally fucking tow in, like, this massive barrel of... It might as well say nuclear waste on it, right? they wheel that into the kitchen. One of them gets sprayed with it, burned, blah, 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 blah. But, like, obviously that barrel contains some pretty nefarious shit.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, fine. I'm glad we're in agreement anyway. There is one thing that we skipped.
Sorry, go on.
I didn't mean to cut you off there. I just wanted to say there is one thing that we skipped, and that is that the reason they're there in the first place, I mean, we've essentially missed the beginning, the intro to the story. We don't know why they're there yet, but we are told that they were given an indication, like a hint of something being amiss in this school by Mickey Ricky.
Yeah, he's been hacking into army records.
Yeah, because he's a great hacker.
And he basically called the doctor and Rose back to Earth.
I've got a question. I'm sorry. I've got a question right away.
Okay.
I love this episode. I think it's a great episode, but I'm going to be at the Scully in this one.
I will Mulder this episode. Absolutely fine.
Why are there military records about this school? And if so, why aren't unit soldiers just freaking blasting the doors down?
The military records were just into UFO activity. They weren't specifically looking at Jeffrey Vale, but the UFO activity was in this area.
Okay.
And Rose found out that all the kitchen staff were replaced 3 months ago. So, yeah, I can understand why there aren't units everywhere. And units at this point are not quite the force that they will later become. They seem to have a cooling off period. They're probably too busy trying to get Harriet Jones elected.
That's a nice one. That's a good point. And also, they seem to be subordinates to Torchwood, because we do get, I think it's now, we get a scene of Mickey Ricky live, like in real time, trying to hack units. I think it's, is it unit that he tries to, I'm going to say yes, he tries to hack units, but he can't, and instead he gets like a little error message on his screen saying Torchwood access denied.
Which he doesn't tell Rose, because Rose would obviously be able to start linking things together at this point.
Yeah, definitely. Anyway, go for it.
So, woman's injured, and she also sees that the oil is actually eating through bits of the kitchen. It's very, very corrosive.
Yeah.
We get a little bit of a cutscene showing one of the teachers in a classroom and a load of children on computers doing really advanced stuff.
Yes. Well, you say really advanced stuff. There are two points I want to make now. One comes in the form of a question. I'll start with that one. Number one. Why is it that every time you want to show a really advanced thing, it has to come in the form of a Rubik's Cube? Like, any kind of hacking needs to be shown in three dimensions in, like, a cuboid form. Like, you can't just hack something. There has to be a visual representation of it. And every single goddamn kid, and they are all lined up, they're essentially chips in a massive human computer at this point. But they're all looking at the exact same screen. Nothing is changing, right?
Yep.
So,
There are equations going across the screen.
Yeah, but they're all the same equations on every screen. Every kid is looking at the same equations.
That's correct, because they've slaved all of the children's brains together in order to create one big super brain that's solving the equation.
Oh, I see. So they are literally working on the same screen at the same time.
Correct.
Okay. All right, fine. I take it back then. Number two, though, of my points or of my interruption here would be, how many schools in... This is in London, right? How many schools have a computer per student?
This is an IT classroom.
Every kid, we get a little montage later on, dude, where they look at lots of different classrooms. Spoiler alert, people. Sorry about that. And every single kid is on a computer. This school has an amazing budget.
I thought we only saw two computer rooms.
Shit. Oh, you know what? You're probably right. Okay, whatever. All right, so they're hacking something, and one of the teachers, Mr. Wagner, he is just sort of overseeing them. He's like a military leader, almost.
Yeah, and then we cut to Giles and a investigative reporter. She's doing a story on him.
Yeah, why did they let this reporter into the teacher's lounge?
He's got a bit of an ego.
Is that it? Oh, he wants...
When he's gloating to the doctor later, it obviously does.
Yeah, but he's gloating to the doctor later as in, like, hey, I'm an alien, look how awesome I am. In this case, he's gloating to an investigative reporter saying, we have the best school in the nation, like, our students are amazeballs, aren't we great? But that's part of his alibi. Like, that's not... I feel like maybe he should draw less attention to himself at this point.
Possibly, but he does come across as having a big ego.
Okay. Yeah, no, you're right. You're totally right. Anyway.
This is, to New Who people, a random woman who is an investigative journalist.
Yeah.
To the people who watch Classic Who, this is A, the first time in New Who that there has been any explicit reference to any adventure that occurred during Classic Who.
Hmm. Okay. Yeah, that's very true.
The journalist is Sarah Jane Smith, played by Elizabeth Sladen. The late Elizabeth Sladen.
Rest in peace. Yeah, I was about to say.
She is, for those that don't know, and shame on you, she has a prior Doctor Who
connection.
Prior Doctor Who connection.
Freudian. Go for it.
The former companion of Doctors 3 and 4. She was the star of the first ever Doctor Who spin-off.
Yes, to come at this point.
No.
Wait, are you saying it was already on the air?
No, K9 and Company was the first Doctor Who spin-off, and that was in 1981.
Oh, whoa. Wait, hang on. What? I didn't know this.
Yep, she was the star of K9 and Company, which was the first ever Doctor Who spin-off.
Okay.
She will be the star of a second Doctor Who spin-off called The Sarah Jane Adventures.
Yeah.
She has acted alongside Doctors 3, 4, 5, 10, and 11, thus putting her in a very rare group of being a companion of more than two Doctors.
Yeah.
She is the star of her own audiobook series called The Sarah Jane Adventures, which came out before
the TV show, Sarah Jane Adventures.
And they are very, very much more adult.
Oh, good.
They are very, very adult.
In that case, I will happily listen to them. I have a question for you, though.
She did the spin-off, Downtime.
Okay.
And she is generally considered by fandom as one of, if not the top best companion
of
all time.
Oh, bar none. What an incredible companion. I have a question, though, a K-9 question. You said K-9 and Company, that was in the 70s.
I think it was 1980, might be 1981.
Okay, like early 80s, sorry. Yeah. There's another series as well, I think. I may be mistaken. I'm sorry, full disclosure, I haven't seen any of these K-9 spin-off things because, frankly, a priori, I've just decided that they're childish and shit. But I will at some point look into it. Is there not also another show called K-9 and Friends that came after this episode?
There is a TV series called K-9.
Oh, just K-9. Is that an animated show? Because there is also an animated K-9, at least one adventure, I think.
K-9 is not an animated TV show.
Okay.
Although the K-9 in it is CGI.
Really?
Rather than a real prop. I don't believe there is anything called the
K-9 and Friends.
Not as far as I'm aware. At least if it is, I've blocked it out of my memory.
Yeah, there's K-9 and Company. You're absolutely right.
And K-9 and Company was the pilot for a spin-off series, which didn't happen.
Okay. That was just one thing. That wasn't a series.
Yes. Yeah, it was one episode, but it was the very, very first Doctor Who spin-off.
Okay. And then there's the K-9 series. Yeah, I'm on IMDb right now looking at it.
And K-9, the series, is an Australian children's TV show.
Australian?
Yes.
What? With K-9? And it's clearly a Doctor Who spin-off. Why is it Australian? Ladies and gentlemen, for those of you who didn't hear that, JD just shrugged. Okay, anyway, sorry, we're spending loads of time on K-9 here, I apologize. Okay, fine. We get a really nice emotional scene here, though, where the Doctor and Sarah Jane Smith, they are reunited. Sarah Jane does not recognize him, obviously.
And, you know, she gets introduced to the teachers by Finch.
And actually makes a reference to John Smith. She's like, oh, I used to have a friend who went by that name or something to that effect.
Yeah, and, you know, the Doctor here is just all smiling and happy to have seen Sarah Jane Smith.
Oh, he does a fantastic job here.
And it's not acting.
Yeah.
David Tennant is a massive Doctor Who fan. And this was...
Oh, to him, it must have been as big a bombastic a moment as to the core fans.
Oh, yeah. There is no acting in this scene. This is just David Tennant actually gushing.
Yeah.
So it is now nighttime. Sarah is breaking into the school and Doc and the Rose are...
The Rose?
The Rose. Doc and Rose...
Yes. Yeah, they're all breaking in at the same time. Not just Doc and Rose, dude.
Oh, Doc and Rose and Mickey.
Exactly. Ricky's there as well.
And they split up and start investigating. And Sarah Jane...
She sees what?
A police box.
Yeah. She sees the flipping TARDIS. Like, it is undoubtedly the TARDIS, because why else would there be a, you know, 1960s police box in the middle of a school?
And she just backs out in, not in horror, but in just almost not understanding what's happening. Just for a couple of seconds.
Yeah.
And then she meets Tennant.
And this is probably what you were referring to before. This is where we start getting references back to a previous, back to a proper classic episode.
It's you, isn't it? You've regenerated. Yes, half a dozen times since we last met.
Yeah, but not just that. Oh, maybe I'm skipping ahead, but there is some point where she goes, why did you leave me? And he starts saying, yeah, but I wasn't allowed to bring you to Gallifrey because you were unworthy and, you know, you were just human shit.
That's later on in
Sorry.
That's in the cafe.
Okay. But this is where it starts anyway. I mean, we do start essentially filling the gap between the Doctor's last encounter, as in Tom Baker's last encounter with her, right?
Yes.
I mean, okay, actually, this will feed back to the trivia point that you left before, because this is definitely, I think this is definitely a reference back to Tom Baker. But you just mentioned that she has had audiobook adventures with later Doctors.
No, she had a TV adventure with a later Doctor.
Oh, TV adventure. Even better.
Which is not referenced at all in this episode.
Exactly. So why is she so like, oh, wait, I haven't seen you since you had curly hair and a really long scarf, when she should be going, I haven't seen you since that spin-off movie that we did together when you were like, who was it? The seventh Doctor? Sixth Doctor?
No. It was actually a normal episode. She was actually, she was in The Five Doctors.
Wait, she was in The Five Doctors?
Yep.
Wow, I have completely blocked that out of my memory for some reason.
She was John Pertwee's companion in it, and she met the Fifth Doctor, she met Tegan, and the Brigadier in it.
Really?
Yep.
Awesome. Okay.
So then Rose turns up, just to completely gazump the entire situation.
That's a good expression, gazump. She's such a B-word.
Oh, she's a complete bitch at this point. And Sarah is just as bitchy back to Rose. And I think
I don't think she's just as bitchy.
It's soundbite time.
Oh, really? Is it? Is it really? Okay, fine. Soundbites.
Sarah Jane bites.
Hi. Nice to meet you. You can tell you're getting older. Your assistants are getting younger.
Okay, yes, I agree. That is a really good soundbite. it's around about the same time. I was about to propose a different soundbite, and this, in fact, is a Mickey Ricky soundbite. Are you up for that one?
Yep.
Okay, soundbite.
Oh, mate, the missus and the ex. Welcome to every man's worst nightmare.
So wait, hang on. In his mind, Doc and Rose are actually a couple.
Oh, yeah.
That's it? There's no doubt there whatsoever. Mickey Ricky thinks that the Doctor is just plowing his ex, as in Rose.
Yeah, he's moved on.
How has he moved on? Wait, a moment ago, we had a conversation between Rose and Ricky in which she was like, well, I really wish you had called me because you wanted to just blast me from behind. And now, all of a sudden, it's like, oh, wait, dating / sleeping with the Doctor. There is some sort of, like, the moral compass is just fucking flipping around like there's a magnet on the loose.
That's what Rose says. But Mickey, in that conversation, says, the last thing I would do is invent an emergency. You know, he's actually called her back to try and help Earth. He hasn't called her back for a booty call. That's just what Rose says.
Yeah, I know, but that's my point. But also, given that, why doesn't Ricky, by which I mean Mickey, why doesn't he go, wait, hang on, why would I call you to, I don't know, plow you or see if you were available for a shag, when I know that you're in a relationship that is undoubtedly sexual in nature with a freaking badass Time Lord?
He just doesn't feel the need on that conversation to say it. You know.
Well, you know what? No, I don't know, man. This is what I'm asking.
So, again, the three of them meet up.
I'm going to continue to be really annoyed by this, but that's okay.
Yeah, you continue.
Let's move on.
The Doctor, Rose, Sarah, and Mickey Smiths, they meet up.
So just to clarify, we have Mickey Smith, we have Sarah Jane Smith, and we have the Doctor portraying John Smith.
And then we have Rose Tyler. So she's the odd one out in this episode.
Well, at least he's not shagging someone with his own surname.
So they go to the headmaster's office and they find giant bats hanging from the ceiling.
Yeah, actually, I think we skipped this earlier. There was a scene with a kid at some point where he saw Mr. Wagner, whatever his name is, the maths dude, the maths teacher.
Yeah, Wagner.
It's a pretty cool scene, actually, as in special effects-wise. It's a pretty cool scene in which the kid looks under a table, sees what looks like this kind of... like a gargoyle, basically, is what I'm thinking,
yes,
right?
Yeah.
And then he stands up, and when he stands up and the camera moves with him, the gargoyle has basically turned into Mr. Wagner, right? It's a pretty cool scene. So we know that there are these bat-like, gargoyle-esque creatures lurking around the place. And now, fast forward to the, well, present, I guess, they're running around. All of a sudden, they find a room full of said gargoyles. So this is, just to point out, this is not the first time that we've encountered them.
Oh, no. It's the first time these people encounter them.
Okay, that's true. Yeah.
The doctor says, oh, I need to get the TARDIS. I need to go and analyse the oil from the kitchen. And Sarah Jane turns around and goes, might be able to help you. Come to my car. The doctor has a mini orgasm when in the boot of Sarah's car is K-9.
Yeah, very, very cool.
And K-9's a bit broken and rusty. And
should we take a moment to explain who K-9 is? Just in case we have people listening to this podcast who are not familiar with K-9.
Yeah, the tin dog has a prior Doctor Who connection.
Oh, wait, you don't say. All right, go for it.
During the Fourth Doctor and Leela adventure, The Invisible Enemy, in the 50th century, which oddly enough is where Captain Jack comes from.
Yes.
The Doctor defeats an enemy virus with the help of a tin dog who belongs to a Professor Marius.
Oh, really? Marius?
Yeah.
Okay. Does he have a surname? Is it spelled with a K?
Why would it be? No.
Okay, fine.
I actually don't even think he has a surname. Marius could be a surname for all I know. Anyway.
Whatever. K-9 belongs to Marius.
To Professor Marius. Okay. And at the end of the episode, K-9 goes off to join the Doctor and Leela as a companion. K-9 then stays on for a while and is a companion with Romana as well. And then K-9 Mark 1 goes off to stay with Romana in E-Space at the end of Warrior's Gate.
Okay.
K-9 Mark 2.
How was K-9 Mark 2 created?
Sorry, K-9 Mark 1, my fault.
Okay,
K-9 Mark 1 stays on Gallifrey.
Okay.
With Leela.
Okay.
When Leela leaves, K-9 Mark 2 goes off with Romana.
Question. How is Mark 2 created?
From a kit which the Doctor kept under the TARDIS console.
A kit? There's a K-9 kit?
Yes.
Why is there a K-9 kit if K-9 originally belonged to Professor Marius?
The Doctor liked him. I have no idea. That made no sense.
Okay, fine. So then K-9 Mark 2 has lots of adventures.
Stays with Romana in E-Space at the end of Warrior's Gate.
Shazam. Then Mark 3.
K-9 Mark 3 is given to Sarah Jane Smith as a present in the spin-off episode K-9 and Company and is seen with Sarah Jane Smith at the start of The Five Doctors. And this we see here is K-9 Mark 3.
Yes. Nice one. Ladies and gentlemen, all of those gaps have now been filled. You're welcome. I say you're welcome on behalf of JD. Okay.
So they go to a cafe and the Doctor repairs K-9 while Mickey and Rose... Basically, Mickey does his level best for 5 minutes not to say, I told you so.
Yeah, I think it, as much as I dislike Mickey Rickey as a character, I think he does a great job in this scene. Let it be known, I had a compliment to give to Mickey Rickey.
And I will also give a compliment to the sound editor of this episode.
Oh, really?
Because the music playing in the background of the cafe is Joy Division's Love Will Tear Us Apart.
Oh, nice. Yes. Oh, yeah, fantastic choice. A very good choice. Anyway, so K-9 now wakes up, quote-unquote. The Doctor repairs him. By the way, a tiny tangent, at Comic-Con in London, London Film and Comic-Con that was, I saw the dude who plays K-9, or
John
who voices Leeson. Him. Yeah.
John Leeson.
Yes, John Leeson was there. Not the only John. Also John Levine.
Yes, I've got a picture of myself hugging. Oh my God, I've got a picture of us hugging. It's amazing. I'm so emotional right now. Just even remembering it was amazing. Anyway, ladies and gentlemen, yes, I met the dude, John Leeson, who voices K-9. And let me tell you, he sounds exactly like K-9, even in his normal life.
Yeah.
pretty much anyway.
Yeah, okay.
So this is where Sarah and the Doctor have their conversation.
Yes. Oh, you're right.
And she goes, basically...
like, why did you leave me?
Why did you leave me?
Yeah.
You know, and the Doctor said, well, I was going off to Gallifrey. I couldn't take you with him. That's in the episode, The Hand of Fear.
Why was she disregarded as a companion at the time? Had she just had enough time as a companion? Was that the thing? Did she want to leave? Is there a story behind that, basically? And how did fans react?
Not really. She'd been a companion for quite a while.
Because they could easily, I'm thinking they could easily have written a different Exodus for her. I mean, there didn't need to be a rule in that said non-Gallifreyans are not allowed on Gallifrey. Or like, beings are not allowed on Gallifrey or whatever.
No, absolutely not. She was just, I think, you know, Elizabeth Sladen was just looking to leave at the time.
Oh, I see, okay.
She had been a very good companion. She'd been a very, very long-serving companion.
Yeah. Aside from Doctor Who spin-offs, what did she do afterwards? Did she have much of a TV career or a movie career?
No, not really. She didn't do that much, Liz Sladen. She was going to be invited back.
Okay.
But she couldn't do it. She was going to come back and be a bridging companion from Baker to Davison.
Okay.
But they decided to go a different route and they created, it was either Nyssa or Tegan they created for the purpose. But they were going to invite her back. But, you know, she did the same as most companions at the time. You know, she did her role and then she moved off to do other things. She loved being in Doctor Who and, you know, even up until her death, she worked on Doctor Who pretty much, you know, constantly. You know, she did audio adventures. She never had a bad word about Doctor Who. She loved John Pertwee. You know, she when
more so than Tom Baker.
Oh, yeah. You know,
when you say love, do you mean like love?
No. She was, They were incredibly, incredibly good friends.
Okay.
She was, at the time she left, the only companion ever to make front page news for leaving, whereas previously doctors had made front page news by leaving.
Well, how many years was she on the show?
Four.
Yeah, that's a long time. That's longer than some doctors have been on the show.
Yes, absolutely. And also, her leaving, the actual scene where she leaves Tom Baker, they leave each other, they wrote themselves. It was
really?
Not written into the script. Bob Baker and Dave Martin, who wrote Hand of Fear, they let Liz Sladen and Tom Baker write the departure scene themselves. And it is an amazingly good scene. It is probably one of the best companion departures, that is up there. And they wrote it themselves because they wanted, she was sad to leave Doctor Who. You know, these things happen and, you know, it's...
Sure, yeah.
She had other things to move on to.
Okay, all right.
So we get this and the Doctor...
Yeah, we're back in the
cafe.
Yeah.
K-9's just
greasy spoon.
Alive. K-9 does his thing with the oil and they find out it's krillitane oil.
Yes, it is. These gargoyles, they are so-called krillitanes. And conceptually, they're a very cool alien species. What they do basically is they travel from world to world. Correct me if I'm wrong here. They travel from world to world, take over said world, and then also absorb certain genetic characteristics of the species inhabiting, like originally inhabiting that world, as part of their own genome.
Yeah, but I am going to put a pin into it because one of my very few problems with this episode will occur later on about this.
Oh, really? Okay. I'm interested to hear this. All right, fine.
Mickey and Sarah have a conversation.
Yeah.
And to be fair, in this episode, apart from the Doctor and Sarah, which is just obvious, the most chemistry between any two people is between Sarah Jane and Mickey Smith. Because...
It is, in a way. They're both the two discarded companions.
Yeah.
And there's a fantastic line. Actually, you know what? Shall we soundbite that? There's a fantastic line of Ricky's.
In fact, Sarah's line before then...
Oh, really?
It's the one I was thinking of soundbiting.
Okay, well, let's soundbite both of them.
Because they immediately follow each other.
Dude, we're doing this. Ladies and gentlemen, hold on to your pacemakers. We're doing this. Double soundbite.
Double Smithbite.
The Doctor likes travelling with an entourage. Sometimes they're humans, sometimes they're aliens, and sometimes they're tin dogs. What about you? Where do you fit in the picture?
Me? I'm their man in Havana. I'm the technical support. Oh, my God. I'm the tin dog.
Yeah, fantastic. Both of them.
And then the Doc and Rose are having their conversation while Mickey and Sarah are having theirs. And, you know, Rose is going...
Is this the bit where she basically goes, why did you leave this chick? Is this what you're going to do to me?
Yeah. You can spend the rest of your life with me, but I can't spend the rest of mine with you.
Yeah. And he says something which I disagree with.
Which is?
He says, Time Lords don't age. He doesn't say Time Lords don't age. He says, I don't age. Humans decay. But clearly, Time Lords age as well.
Yeah.
He's not a fetus. And we see Matt Smith's exodus later on, where he's like a mega old man.
I think he was doing it on time scale.
Yes. Oh, fine. Sorry, I'm being too nitpicky here. But you know what I'm trying to say, right?
Yeah.
Okay, whatever.
Next morning, the TARDIS team.
Yeah.
The five-person TARDIS team now.
Yes. Oh, it's so awesome. We've got an extra companion. Where do I put this companion? Do I plonk this companion in the list under classic companions, or do I plonk her in the list of new companions?
She actually gets both, because she is, while she's not on the opening titles for this episode, she is on the opening title sequence for Journey's End. She is actually a new Who companion because she's in the titles. She's in both.
You know what? Sarah Jane is worth it. Yes, well, she's being added to both of them.
Yeah, she I think is the only new and old Who companion to both be in the title sequence.
Bingo.
So.
Well done, Sarah.
They split up, and the Doc goes and has a word with Mr. Finch, who we discover his real name is Brother Lasser.
Yes. Is this in the pool?
This is the swimming pool.
Yeah, yeah. Awesome scene.
It is absolutely amazing. He is exuding evil. He could quite happily go back to Buffy at this point and be in, you know, one of the big bad monsters of Buffy.
Yeah. Absolutely. Holy crap. And it's... It's like a theatrical level of evil as well. It's a little bit later on. You know the scene, I'm sure you know the one that I'm talking about, the one where he suddenly screams, or the one where he just shows his teeth. Like, it's not a realistic level of evil, it's a theatrical level of evil, which is it surpasses realism. It is amazing. God damn it, Anthony Stewart Head. Why are you so bloody awesome? I hope you're listening to this podcast, by the way. Oh, are you? That's amazing. Thanks for listening.
We get a cutscene outside of Mickey whinging that he's been left in the car.
There's such a good line. Oh, what's the line? Who says this, by the way? There's a line where Mickey's in the car with K-9. And the doc, I think it's the doctor. Is it the doctor? I think it's the doctor who says something like,
don't forget to leave the window open a crack.
Yes, exactly.
And he's metal.
Yes, like, no, it's not for him. It's such a good scene. Oh my God.
We now go to the final group of people, who is Sarah and Rose.
Okay,
and
yes.
They're bonding moments. They're working on the computers, and Sarah can't get the Sonic to work, and, you know.
And they start trading stories.
No, before the trading stories, they literally bitch at each other.
Yes, okay, sorry, they do. But they bitch at each other to the point where Sarah Jane kind of wins, and it renders Rose nothing short of impressed.
Well,
When she does, they start bonding.
Yeah,
It's when she says, by the way, like, we've seen these aliens and these aliens and these aliens and the Loch Ness Monster. And Rose just goes, wait, I am so wet right now.
Well, yeah,
what did you just say?
I'll go through that.
Okay, sorry. Go for it.
Because this is the largest list of Doctor Who episodes that we have ever had a callback to.
Okay, so she goes, Sarah goes, mummies.
And that would be Pyramids of Mars, generally considered to be one of the top two Tom Baker episodes.
One of the top two? Oh, nice. I know what top one is. Pyramids of Mars, I have to say, I still, to this day, remember the first time I saw it. I remember being a child watching Pyramids of Mars. Unless I'm thinking of a different Egyptian-themed episode, there's a riddle in it. Which stuck with me for ages after that. As in, I was a child, and that riddle stuck with me for ages. It's the, you encounter two people, one of them can only tell the truth, the other one can only tell a lie. How do you find out which one of them is which? Right?
Yes.
Oh my God, I love that serial. It is amazing. And the mummy robot thingies, they are so creepy.
And of course, we have Francis Wolfe as Sutek, who is a really, really good villain, because his voice just booms everything he says. He's like an evil Brian Blessed.
Nice. Very nice. Okay, to this, Rose responds with, I've met ghosts, which...
Unquiet Dead,
exactly, yeah. Sarah continues, robots, lots of robots.
Okay, that would be the Tom Baker regeneration episode Robot, the Android Invasion, the Sontaran Experiment, probably the Time Warrior.
Wait, Sontaran Experiments?
Sontaran Experiment, yeah.
So, wait, the Sontarans build robots? I don't remember that episode.
Yep.
Oh, that's it. That nicely sums it up. Okay, yes.
I'm not spoiling the entire episode. Yes, Sontaran Experiment, it was the first two-parter in quite a while.
Okay.
Once again, it had Kevin Lindsay as a Steyr in. And the robot in it was capturing people and bringing them to Steyr's ship because he was needing to experiment on them. Hence the Sontaran Experiment.
Creepy. Very creepy. Okay. All right. So Sarah goes robots. Rose.
Oh, and also the other...
Oh, wait, there's more?
The other robot it might have been, for reasons that we talked about earlier, is the last robot she met... canonically would have been the Rastan warrior robot in Five Doctors. But considering she doesn't mention Five Doctors ever, and apparently the last time she saw the Doctor was Tom Baker.
Yeah.
That's a bit up in the air.
Yeah, sure. And also she does say lots of robots, so let's just clarify. She is probably referring to every robot up until Tom Baker.
Which there were a lot of them.
Yeah. As in up until and including. Anyway, so yeah. Rose responds in kind, saying, Slitheen in Downing Street. Oh, bloody hell, Rose. This is not you bragging.
Farting aliens of London.
Yeah, exactly. Rose, you know what? You've seen lots of robots. That's nothing. I've seen flatulent aliens.
You know, so far, Sarah is ahead on points.
Scene should have ended at that point. You know, Sarah should have just gone, wait, what?
Sarah gets an extra point for mummy. Sarah gets a point for robots. So far, she's 2-0 at the moment.
Yeah, exactly. I'm sorry, but the quote-unquote ghosts from Unquiet Dead, they don't count. Okay, fine. Sarah goes Daleks.
Well, yes.
Loads of them.
Yeah, only two.
Wait, what, two?
Death to the Daleks.
Okay.
And more importantly, and will become incredibly important in the next Sarah Jane episode, which is Journey's End.
Yeah.
Genesis of the Daleks.
I see. Okay. Is this the one where Tom Baker has the chance to just go, no, I'm going to undo them?
Yes. And.
Yeah. Okay.
Because Davros in Journey's End actually says to Sarah Jane, you were there at their creation.
Okay. All right. Rose counters that by saying, I met the Emperor.
Okay. Rose gets a point for this one because, as we know, as our guest host, Emperor Dalek.
Is he there with you now, by the way? Would he like to chime in? I mean, it's a real shame. I haven't seen him on, by the way, ladies and gentlemen, sorry, spoiler alert, we're doing this recording on Skype. I haven't seen the Emperor Dalek in frame so far. Is he around?
No, let's go have a look at him.
Remember, JD, hint, hint, I'll put this in brackets. This is an audio podcast. The listeners can't see you turning your webcam around.
I'm getting ready for Christmas. Oh. You can follow me on Twitter. At Emperor_Dalek. 47. 96 people got there before me.
Oh, well, thank you for that, Emperor. So, we'll give Rose a point.
Yeah, Emperor, get your own podcast.
Yeah, so okay. she's on 2-1 at the moment.
Okay, that's nice. That's very good. Sarah continues, though. She goes, antimatter monsters.
I actually made a mistake when I was writing my notes for this, because I put down it was Three Doctors, and then I realised she wasn't in the Three Doctors. It's actually Planet of Evil.
Oh, really? What are the antimatter monsters?
Right, they are... Well, in Three Doctors, which were the ones that I was thinking of, they are the classic... antimatter monsters in Doctor Who. They were created by a Time Lord called Omega, who was put through a black hole when he was creating the power source for Gallifrey. And basically, he was the big bad, and he lived in the antimatter universe.
Is this Pertwee or Baker?
That was Pertwee, and that's what I thought it was until I realised that Sarah Jane Smith wasn't actually in that episode.
So, oh, right.
right, okay.
And then I remembered that there was a planet called Zeta Minor, which is the planet of evil. And it's a gateway to another planet. And the main sort of enemies in there were antimatter monsters. So they were basically creatures from the antimatter universe.
Nice. Okay, cool. What's the score?
Oh, no, so we got Rose first.
Okay, sorry, yeah, Rose counters that. She goes, gas masked zombies.
Oh, empty child, Dr. Dances.
Empty child and Dr. Dances. Oh, my goodness.
We're definitely giving this one to Rose, so it's 2-2.
I would hope so, because that's a fantastic double feature.
Yeah, it's 2-2.
Okay, fine. I have a feeling I know who's going to win the next round. Sarah goes, real living dinosaurs.
Invasion of the dinosaurs.
Yeah.
Pertwee,
correct?
Pertwee.
And Rose, the only thing she can say is real living werewolf. You know what, Rose? We just reviewed that episode. Shut up. Point to Sarah.
Point to Sarah. 3-2 to Sarah. And
3-2
then
to Sarah. And then Sarah goes.
Sarah just smashes it out of the park with
Loch Ness Monster,
which was in Terror of the Zygons.
Yes, exactly. And which, by the way, we also encountered during the audiobook adventure Zygon Who Fell to Earth.
Correct, we did. So at this point, Rose just realizes how stupid this entire thing is. And
basically just goes, you are amazeballs. Are you shitting me? You met the Loch Ness Monster? That's amazing. Let's just be BFFs. They start bonding, like properly bonding. And they're like talking about all these little idiosyncrasies of the Doctor. It's like, oh, does he still do that? Yes, he does. Does he still do that? Oh, amazeballs. And then the Doctor walks in on them just giggling like schoolgirls about him behind his back. It's an amazing scene.
Absolutely. And in an episode full of amazing scenes, this one is my favorite.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Just nice. The entire thing from start to finish.
Okay, yeah, fair enough.
So now we get a few quick cuts. The headmaster is getting ready to put his evil plan into operation. We don't know what the evil plan really is at this point.
At some point, sorry to cut you off there. At some point, we do need to get a scene where the Doctor tries to open something with a deadlock. Is that later on?
No, it's in about 30 seconds.
Oh, okay, sure. All right, sorry. Go for it. Sorry.
We get, children trying to get into the IT classroom. Have Wagner eating some people in the staff room.
Okay, yeah.
And the Doctor is trying to get into the computer and he can't open it with the sonic screwdriver. Why, Ponkin?
Because it is locked with a deadlock seal, which this has been used before. We have encountered this before. Was this in Big Wolf? Oh, Bad Wolf, sorry?
Deadlock seal.
Yeah. When did we encounter a deadlock seal before? No, it was an audiobook. It was an audiobook. Don't tell me. Wait, hang on. Because we have encountered deadlock seals before and they...
It was in Bad Wolf as well.
Oh, yeah, sweet score. But it was also in an audiobook, I'm sure.
There was, and I can't remember the audiobook, but we did it fairly recently.
Yeah, it was quite recent. Hey, dear listeners, people of podcast land, do you remember which audiobook we reviewed in which they make a reference to deadlock seals? Let us know. Tweet us. Pop a comment on the website.
But it's always good to have an anti-sonic device.
Yes, that's true. However, wait, hang on, sorry. Just to say, what's her face? Sarah Jane says, I thought the sonic screwdriver could open anything. And the Doctor goes, yeah, anything but a deadlock seal. What about affecting anything made of wood?
Yeah, but you don't get many locks made of wood.
No, but you might as well. I mean, in the 50th anniversary, you get a whole Cyberman made of wood, which, by the way, makes no sense whatsoever. But yeah.
Yeah, that's a different story.
Okay, fine.
Yeah, he's...
Tune into Who Back When in about 15 years when we get to that episode.
He's being... it's a bit of hyperbole, I think, to be honest.
Mm.
Finch locks down the school with some sort of high-tech security.
Yeah.
The large kid, Kenny, basically runs to the door, gets Mickey Smith's attention.
Yeah.
Tells Mickey they've taken all the children.
Okay.
So Mickey goes back to speak to K-9 in another brilliant scene between a tin dog and Noel
Clarke.
between our two tin dogs.
Yes, exactly.
And basically he hits K-9 and K-9 wakes up.
You know what? It's a trope I'm happy to live with.
And
let's resuscitate technology by means of violence.
Yeah. Mickey says, right, we need to get inside the school. Do you come with a lockpicking device?
And K-9 just goes, correct me if I'm wrong here, I think he just goes like, we're in a car.
Maybe you have a drill attachment.
We're in a car.
fat load of good you are.
We're in a car.
Wait a second, we're in a car.
Wow. I think it's pretty clear at this point which Tin Dog is better.
It's a great funny scene.
Yes, it is.
So we skip back to the IT room of death. This is where I have a problem with the episode.
Oh, really? Okay, yeah. Do tell.
Apparently, the computers are trying to crack something called the Stasis Paradigm.
Yes.
Which is a universal equation which gives you control of the building blocks of the universe. Time and space, matter, energy, whatever, yours just to control.
Yeah, yeah. Okay,
sure. I have a big problem with this.
Okay, go for it.
First of all, this is not the only time in Doctor Who history where an equation or mathematics have been able to reshape reality. In the
Nor should it be.
No, in the episode Legopolis, and by extension the sequel to it, Castrovalva.
Yeah.
The Legopolitans are using something called block transfer computation.
Sorry, say both of those things again.
Legopolis.
Yeah, no, what are the people called who live there?
Legopolitan.
Gotcha. I gotcha. Nice one.
I managed to do it the first time.
That is not the kind of word that any human being should be able to say twice in a row. I'm sorry about that. I had to.
Logopolitans.
Hey, there we go. And what are they trying to do again?
They're using block transfer computation.
Right, okay.
Which is basically mathematics that can reshape reality.
Sure, yeah.
But it could only be done by really, really highly trained sedentary monks on a planet that they trained for years. And, you know, this was their life, was the numbers and block transfer computation.
Okay.
And they could reshape reality because they were able to open up a charged vacuum embodiment, a portal between reality, between this universe and another universe.
Okay.
So that, you know, entropy could escape from one universe to another. And it was really hard to do.
Yeah.
The problem I have here is we can do it with a load of chips, oil, computers, and kids.
It makes no sense. It's so Scooby-Doo. It is mega Hanna-Barbera.
It is, because if it was this easy to do, the Daleks would have done it by now.
Yeah, and also, not just them, the freaking, what do they call, the gargoyles, they could clearly have done this themselves as well. Just manipulate enough people to do this for a long enough period of time. In fact, you know what? The outcome of solving this equation is complete control over time and space. In fact, let's emphasize the first one. Time. Complete control of time. Any civilization intelligent enough and also manipulative and or evil enough to be able to pull this off would just start right now. Like, start the second you hear about this equation, begin to solve it, and when you've finished solving it, go, like, rewrite time and make sure that you solved it beforehand. There is no need to speed through something that gives you control over time.
Or if you were a race that had the ability to time travel.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Yes, exactly. In fact, let's fast forward to the 50th anniversary of Doctor Who, where you have all the doctors simultaneously calculating, like performing the same calculation
throughout all of their lives.
Exactly. Yeah. Let's fast forward to that point and give that ability, not hypothetically, just give the exact same ability, just drawn out over a longer period of time, to the gargoyles.
Yeah.
And they could just pull it off. You know what? I'm sorry, Doctor, you've lost. The gargoyles have won. They won before you even knew that there was anything wrong. They won before Rose was disappointed that she wasn't booty called by her ex-boyfriend.
Either way, the Doctor decides he doesn't want control over space and time and stops everyone.
Yeah. But weirdly, did you say this? Weirdly, Giles from Buffy, he just goes, we want to do all this, but we don't want to control it all. We want you to control it. You're a much better person to be in charge of things.
Yeah.
I think it's more than an inferral. I think he pretty clearly says, listen, yeah, you should join us and be a god.
Yeah.
Or at least a godlike creature next to us.
I think you should be in charge. He's saying that purely so that the Doctor doesn't stop them.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I don't think that was the original plan. He's just saying that on the fly so that the Doctor doesn't stop him.
Okay, you know what? Fair enough. Fantastic. Can I just say something else? Because I think your limitless knowledge of Doctor Who will factor in here. I think in this same conversation, he says something like, just think of the worlds you could save. And he mentions at least three. And I've made a note of three of them. And I don't know if I missed any out.
He mentions Pergamon.
Yeah.
Acinta.
Yes. And Gallifrey.
And Gallifrey.
Yeah. So what are Pergamon and Acinta?
No idea.
Oh, really? Okay, so they're just, like, words that they've made up.
Yeah.
The BBC producers snorting kilograms of cocaine going, what's a cool name for an alien world? Pergamon. Nice one. Nailed it. Go for it.
Yeah.
Okay, fine.
I am not aware that it has ever been in Doctor Who before.
Okay, cool. So anyway.
Anyway, Mickey drives through the front door.
Yeah. I'm sorry. Holy shit, I give you 3 seconds and then I'm going to cut you off again. Is it just me or is Mickey Argyle from Die Hard 1? Mickey is Argyle in Die Hard 1, and K-9 is the teddy bear that is next to Argyle in Die Hard 1. That's it. And the shit car that Sarah Jane Smith drives around in, that's the limousine that Argyle drives in Die Hard 1. The best Christmas movie ever.
Anyway!
What? What do you mean? Anyway, this is clearly...
It's not an allusion to Die Hard.
Okay, fine.
Anyway... The gargoyles start attacking. Mickey and K-9 and everyone are they're all together now.
Yes, they are.
K-9 holds off the Krillitanes while the Doctor and everyone gets into a room to the room the Doctor was teaching in earlier.
Yeah. And there's like this massive screen, right? Is that in this scene? I think it's in this scene. There's a massive screen where we get to see the calculation, like the matrix green Rubik's Cube.
That was the previous scene where the Doctor said, no, I don't want to have all this power, and then destroys it.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, but I'm sorry. That's another trope that we just need to let's just give mention to this trope. And that is, you don't stop a computer by breaking the screen.
No, it was quite clear that the computers were still running. That was just the Doctor being pissed off at the screen.
Oh, okay. Okay, fine.
So K-9 holds off the Krillitanes. The Doctor runs off. The large guy, kid, Kenny, to the response to the
Doctor. We haven't even been talking about Kenny, by the way. Well, Kenny's been around all this time just being chubby.
Yeah, and he turns around and goes, the Doctor says, how do we fight bats? And then Kenny sets off the fire alarm. Obviously having done at least one course in, you know, Sonics.
Yeah, which is really, actually, it's very, very good.
So they all run to the kitchen and they find out that the Krillitane oil, the Doctor has figured out that the Krillitane oil is toxic to the Krillitanes because obviously Rose saw one of them injured earlier on.
Yeah.
I've got a problem with this.
Oh, really? What is that?
How?
What do you mean how?
They excrete this oil, which is toxic to them.
Wait. They excrete it?
Yes.
I thought this was like a product of their world, not a product of their biology. Are you saying this is oil that they physically, physiognomically, biologically exude?
I thought it was. It might not be. But that's what I've been led to believe.
So basically what you're saying is, why aren't their pee holes like hurting like crazy?
Basically, there's something wrong here. You know... If they're allergic to their own oil, then...
Oh, God, that's terrible.
If it's not excreted and it's just a product of their planet...
No, but seriously, how pissed off would you be if you were allergic to your own oil, JD?
Yeah, very. Even if it is a product just of their planet, then they've chosen, and we know that they can choose because Finch chose to be human.
Yeah.
So why did they choose to be allergic to their own oil, which they're obviously using for a lot of things? So,
oh, that's a good point, because they're continuously modifying their own genetics, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. You're totally right. They would have done without allergies at this point.
Yeah, so it doesn't matter which way around it is, whether it's their excretion or something from their planet. It's still the same problem.
Excretion. Yeah.
So K-9 basically now says, right, you can't get into it because it's deadlocked, but I can basically blow it up by standing right next to it because I've got low power. So going to sacrifice himself.
Yeah, you're right. No, you're totally right. Is this where we go into... I cannot believe that we haven't mentioned this before. This episode contains so many montages. There are like 4 montages in one single episode. They're like, oh my God, we're hacking montages. Or, oh my God, we are studious montages. Or in this case, I think, unless I'm misremembering, oh my God, K-9 is a tin dog montage.
Yes, this is K-9 is a tin dog montage.
Yeah.
So K-9 sacrifices his life.
He does.
And
K-9 Mark III.
K-9 Mark III to destroy all of the Krillitones because he blows up the school.
Yeah, he does. And while they're blowing up the school... So all the kids, they've evacuated, right? I mean, they were previously just... whatever, they were hacking the Matrix Green Rubik's Cube. Something happens to dislodge the kids from the system. Is it... what do they do? Is it... how do they disconnect the kids? Is it like by turning on the sprinkler system or something?
No, Mickey basically...
He pulls the plug.
He literally pulls the plug out.
You're absolutely right. He literally pulls the plug. The kids are disconnected all of a sudden. The kids all run outside. Then we fast forward past all the stuff that we just discussed over the past 10, 15 minutes. And then they blow up the school, at which point everyone is so happy. Like, everyone is mega cheerful. These are kids who have been genetically manipulated to appreciate all the values of being studious and attending class. And all of a sudden, you cannot tell me that, oh, the effect has worn off. This is seconds after they left the building. The building is blown up. They are all just massively elated. And I'm going to put a screenshot of this on the website. Ladies and gentlemen, 38 minutes and 20 seconds in, whom, in the name of balls, is Mickey Ricky hugging? Because Mickey Ricky is part of all this contingent of children. The school explodes, and all of a sudden, Mickey Ricky is hugging one of these clearly underage people.
I can't remember that.
Either way, they shouldn't be elated though, right?
I think it was just like a hypnosis.
Oh, okay.
And they were hyper intelligent while under hypnosis. You know,
yeah, but are you telling me that hypnosis has just worn off?
Yeah, because they're no longer connected to the computers, which was hypnotizing.
It wasn't the computers, dude. It was chips related. As in,
the chips, not computer chips. The chips didn't hypnotize them. Chips increased their intelligence. Rose ate the chips.
Oh, you're right. Actually, we didn't even talk about that. There was the scene where Rose all of a sudden could answer questions pertaining to, at the very least, A-levels, which we know that she doesn't have.
Yeah, she was able to answer what was 2 times 2 and get it right.
Yeah. Well done, Rose. Okay, fine. All right, whatever. So the school blows up. Everyone is massively happy. They're hugging, they're high-fiving, even goddamn Mickey Ricky, who is hugging underage kids. And then we also get a shot of, what's his name? I can't remember his name anymore. Oh, Kenny, the chubby kid, where I'm assuming, like, oh, this is the cute girl in the school. She realizes, oh, wait, hang on, who blew up the school? Oh, it was Kenny. And all of a sudden, it is crystal bloody clear. Kenny is about to get busy. He is just totally going to be the school's, like, he's going to turn up at the school the next day wearing, like, a bling surrounded by hoes. He is the cool kid now. Why am I the only one laughing at this? It's not just the gin man. This is hilarious.
But we need to be sad because Sarah Jane is sad.
Oh, I see. Because Kanan is dead. Yeah, you're right. No, you're very right.
We now cut to the TARDIS, which is now in a park.
Yeah, and so, another screenshot, I think, for the website. I believe this is the first time in New Who where we get to see an exterior shot in which the interior of the TARDIS is visible.
No.
No?
Christmas Invasion.
Oh, okay. Actually, you're probably right about that. Either way, this is certainly the most memorable one so far. Oh, it is a beautiful shot.
Absolutely. The Doctor steps out of the TARDIS and invites Sarah Jane in.
Yeah.
And, you know, Sarah Jane says, I like the new one. I preferred it as it was, but it looks nice.
Yeah. And what, more roundels.
No. Rose and Sarah are still friends. And, you know, she even says, you're still clever. You're more than a match for him.
Yeah. And she also has another line. She says, some things are worth getting your heart broken for.
Yes.
Which really encapsulates her experience with Pertwee and Baker.
Yeah. Find me if you need to one day. Find me.
Oh, so beautiful.
And the Doctor invites Sarah back on the TARDIS.
Yeah, but she doesn't want to.
No, she said she's got a life of her own,
What?
She understands now that she has things that she needs to do here.
Where's my phone? I'm going to call bullshit. That is ridiculous. Wouldn't say no to that. You wouldn't decline that. What kind of life does she have, dude? Does she have a boyfriend? Does she have a husband? Does she have a family? No, she doesn't. She has a fucking tin dog who just blew up.
No.
Stay with the doctor.
What she has got is that she's needed on Earth to protect it, like she did just then.
That's rubbish. I'm calling that out. That is rubbish, because the doctor is there to save the Earth as well.
Well, no, because
he's
not quite often always there. The fact is, the whole point of this episode was that...
To set up the spin-off with Sarah Jane?
No. The whole point of this episode was that Sarah had spent so long pining for the Doctor.
Yeah.
And, you know, she realized she was waiting for him because, you know, there had been gaps in their adventures during the times when they were together anyway. She just thought this was a long gap.
Sure.
But now she realized that the Doctor has moved on, right?
Okay.
This is not her Doctor. This is someone completely different. And I can see why she wouldn't do it, because she's, after talking to Rose and after actually quite bonding with Rose.
Yeah.
This is not her doctor, you know, and, you know, she has her things to do, and she knows that someone's there looking after the doctor, which I think she probably cares about.
Sure.
And then Mickey asks whether he can join, and we get the most two-faced reply from Rose, where Mickey says, "Rose, is that okay?" And Rose, lying through her teeth,
I know,
goes, "No, great, why not?" But Sarah does have a great line. She says, "Oh, go on, Doctor Sarah Jane Smith, Mickey Smith, you need a Smith with you."
Yeah, no, that's I agree. That's a fantastic line. But if you didn't bring bloody Mickey Ricky on board, you wouldn't need that line, and it would be a great episode nonetheless. Rose clearly does not want Mickey around, right? They are no longer a couple. They are no longer destined for each other. And I am so pleased to acknowledge that. Why would you bring him into the fold?
Because they're not going off as boyfriend and girlfriend. Mickey wants to now come and be a time traveler.
Yeah.
He's grown since the first ever episode.
Yeah, Dudenmeister, everyone wants to grow up and become a time traveler. Everyone, right? But holy shit, Rose is the human hero of the story. Mickey Ricky is the cheating piece of garbage.
Because it sets up Age of Steel. That's why it's needed to be there.
Yeah, no, you're right. I mean, okay, fine. This leads on to some great episodes and some great series as well. And Rose and Mickey Ricky, they will have their places in the annals of Doctor Who, and deservedly so, but they didn't need to. I mean, Rose certainly already had made herself worthy of this, but Mickey Ricky really didn't need to. I don't need to look back now in 2014, almost 2015, and go, yeah, Mickey Ricky actually worked out in the end. I'm perfectly happy to go, yeah, you know what, in 2006 we finally got rid of that piece of shit.
Yeah, but the whole point is he is getting as a character far better than he is each time he's on, and
how insensitive of the Doctor is it to go, yeah, no, I'm totally cool with having my companion's ex on board.
But I think that's probably the right response from the Doctor, who is an alien. It was the same thing happened 4 years later.
Oh, really?
When Rory joined. It was exactly the same with Amy and Rory and the Doctor.
Amy and Rory, they were together.
Yeah, but Amy was so infatuated with the Doctor that she almost didn't care about Rory.
Sure, but those two were clearly meant for each other. Like, they were a couple. Regardless of how distracted by the Doctor Amy was, Amy and Rory were clearly meant to be together, right? In this case, we have Rose and Mickey Ricky, who are clearly not meant to be together. They have split up. Mickey Ricky has moved on and found someone else and then broken up with her because he didn't emotionally move on after all, we find out. Rose has clearly moved on because she realizes, and this scene, I think, of all the scenes we have seen those two interact in, this scene by far cements the fact that she is over Mickey Ricky and doesn't need him in her life.
Yeah, but Mickey wanting to join, I can understand. The Doctor wanting to let him, I can understand, because Mickey has proven himself. The Doctor being insensitive to Rose is a very Doctorish thing to do. He is an alien.
Yeah, but Tennant is not as alien as prior Doctors. He is massively human because they're all... every single scene in which he interacts with other human beings is built up to emphasize the romantic potential between him and Rose. That's it, right?
Oh, yeah. No, that bit's fine. But he has no reason not to bring Ricky, because Mickey has proven himself. He has been very useful. He has helped just save everyone. And
I feel like he should have, like, the flatmate conversation with Rose. He should have the chat where he goes, okay, Mickey, Ricky, hang on. I'm not going to give you an answer just now. Let me confer with my flatmate. Then he goes off to a different part of the TARDIS with Rose and he goes, listen, do you still want to be plowed by this dude? If so, I totally get it. If you feel in any way uncomfortable, which effing clearly you do.
Well, he doesn't. Right.
Then I will not let this dude on board.
That's not what he cares about.
He made his choice. He made his choice in Rose.
That's not what he cares about.
Okay.
And, you know, he's bringing him on board because he is useful as a time traveler. He likes saving people.
I think this is the closest you and I have ever got to an argument on who back when, or in general, in fact.
I have no problem with this. I think we better move on the grounds we're not going to agree on this at all.
So, oh man, this is awesome. I'm so pleased that we just got very close to an actual argument on who back when. That is awesome. Okay,
so
fine.
We moved to outside the TARDIS, and basically the Doctor now finally, after 25 years, gets to say goodbye to Sarah.
Yeah, he does.
Which is what she wants. She, the TARDIS lifts off, and there left for Sarah is K9 Mark IV.
Yeah. When was that? When was K9 Mark IV actually created?
He's got a kit. I've told you.
I know he has a kit. You told me. I know this because you told me. But he dematerializes and Kabalamatron, he's already built another K9?
Well, bear in mind that he had to move his TARDIS from Jeffrey Vale to here.
Yeah.
So he probably went in the TARDIS, built the kit, went back in time for the 3 days it took him to build it.
Yeah.
And then land to give K9 to Sarah. When you have a time machine, you can fluff all of that.
Okay.
Or he has them ready built in a cupboard for just when he needs to take one out.
He has a whole bunch of K9s and he just hasn't given them consciousness yet?
Yep.
Wait, yup. That would make the Doctor a complete asshole. That's awful. That is genuinely horrific, having companions just mindless and practically dead lying about somewhere in cryogenic stasis. That is insane, man.
That it does sound like a Tom Baker thing to have done that.
Also, I think this is the kind of thing that really appeals to people who never emotionally bond with their pets.
But Sarah does finally get, I think, the last line, or near the last line of the episode, which is K9 says, the Master rebuilt me. My systems are much improved with new undetectable hyperlink facilities.
Ooh.
And then Sarah quite sarcastically goes, oh, he replaced you with a brand new model. He does that. And that's a nice one. And that's where we end the episode.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, that's a good ending, actually. I like that. Okay, yeah. Shall we jump into review land?
Yeah.
Reviews.
Your turn, buddy.
I like this episode. Mm. It has flaws, but I'm going to compare it to another episode, which I said exactly the same thing about, which was Dalek.
Okay.
Which is, you have an episode which is a rapper. In that one, it was Van Staten. In this one, it's the Krillotanes.
Sure.
But that's not the point of the episode. The point of Dalek was the Doctor and the Dalek in a room, and then what happens afterwards. In this one, it's the Doctor and Sarah. The Krillotanes are almost irrelevant. You can basically substitute that episode with anything else, and it would still be Sarah and the Doctor. And the fallout from him leaving companions, which is really not ever been addressed. And this was a brilliant way to do it. Elizabeth Sladen was possibly the single best companion to get back. She was certainly the most mainstream when Doctor Who was on originally. Elizabeth Sladen's love for the show, David Tennant's love for Elizabeth Sladen, you know, he was a fan during the Baker and Davison eras. So he, you know, he could not have been happier to have been acting alongside Liz Sladen and K9. And it shows, you know, you have an okay episode, but it's brought up to an amazingly high level by having this former companion, by having this dynamic where Rose and Sarah, Mickey and Sarah, the Doctor and Sarah, K9 and Sarah, basically Sarah and anyone she's on screen with. 4.8.
Wow. Okay.
I don't give a shit about the Krillitones. I can blank them out because the rest of the episode, I could watch the scene where she sees the TARDIS for the first time over and over again for 44 minutes, and it would be a brilliant episode.
Yeah, okay, wow. It's a higher mark than I'm going to give this episode, but it's not that much higher. Good review. I don't know really what I can add to it. I'm going to agree with you on a few points. I think this, more so than a Doctor Who adventure, this is a trip down memory lane. This is a nostalgic trip par excellence. It is amazing. We get to meet Sarah Jane. We get to see K-9 again. And actually, I'm going to interrupt myself. I'm going to ask you a question. How many people, or possibly were the... Because I can't remember what it was like. Were the marketing spots for this episode laid out in such a way that people were aware of who Sarah Jane and K-9 were? Did people know about them?
Not talking
about fans of Classic Who.
No, but it's one of those things where there's enough public consciousness that you don't need to have seen it to know that a police box was a TARDIS and, you know, a robotic dog was called K-9. It's like nowadays no one really needs to have seen original Star Trek to know who Spock is. Until the recent films, obviously. But
I would say Spock is far more prominent than K-9, though. I don't doubt that everyone, including people who are not fans of Doctor Who, know what the TARDIS looks like. But K-9, I think, is a little bit more niche. And I'm wondering if in 2006, people were actually aware of this.
I disagree, actually, from a British standpoint.
Okay.
K-9 is quite... He was very, very mainstream.
Okay.
You know, he had front covers of magazines. You know, he was actually very, very mainstream as a TV character.
Okay.
So while, not everyone would have known, there's probably more people knew who K-9 was than Sarah Jane, I would say.
Really? Okay. All right. Well, yeah, I'm going to stick with the argument, though. I think this is more a trip down memory lane than an actual Doctor Who adventure. And I absolutely agree with you. I couldn't care less about the Krillitane. They're just there as, essentially, they're an excuse for me to be able to enjoy the presence of Sarah Jane Smith and K-9 on Doctor Who. I don't care about the Krillitane. I don't know if they're going to reappear. Presumably not. I don't care if they ever do. I don't care if they ever don't. Whatever. I was privileged enough to get to see a former Doctor Who companion, to get references back to Tom Baker, who was my doctor when I was a kid, and to see K-9 again, even though I think K-9 is absolutely dumb. I am sorry, JD. I think K-9 is such a dumb character. Mainly because, I mean, he's created for kids. I'm not a kid anymore, so it's not necessarily geared towards me. And I think probably the first time I saw Doctor Who, I must have been too old to appreciate K-9 as well, because I remember as a kid thinking, too wise. I have 7 years under my belt. I've seen too much of the world to be, beguiled by this tin dog. And certainly now that still stands. Despite that, I think this is a fantastic episode. It's yet another piece of evidence that Mickey Rickey can act, as in Noel Clarke can act. I find him far more tolerable than I've done before. I like the parallel between him and K-9. I like the parallel between Rose and Sarah Jane. I think that is executed perfectly. And even though I couldn't care less about the Krillitane, I think Anthony Stewart Head, my goodness, what an amazing actor. What a great performance. I would like to see him in another role on Doctor Who. I don't know if we don't, actually. Yes, right?
No, we don't.
No, but I would like to see him again on Doctor Who. I think he's a great actor. He's a British treasure, for goodness sake. And he's a nerd deity. So yeah, let's bring him back. I'm not going to give this a 4.8, but I'm not far off. I'm giving this a 4.5 because I have to subtract a little bit in terms of plot. I think the plot makes very little sense. I think it is largely stupid. And I think the Krillitane are, well, just forgettable. So I'm subtracting 0.5 from a perfect score. Shazam.
So that was School Reunion. Next week will be David Tennant and Sophia Miles in Doctor Who.
Who's Sophia Miles?
The girl in the fireplace. She plays Renette in next week's episode.
Oh, of course. I remember thinking that episode was amazeballs. And I have a little toy of whatever they're called. The ones that are wearing the faux Venetian masks. You know, the robots.
The clockwork aliens. Yeah.
Looking forward to it. Ladies and gentlemen, tune in for the next New Who review. Thank you so much for listening to this episode. Oh my God, you've listened up until now. You show great promise. Check this out. I think that you ought to follow JD on Twitter, because that way you can gather even greater intel on the inner workings of his psyche. Go to twitter.com/MariusKane, that is Kane with Ian K, and follow him. It is well worth your time.
And if you want any more of Ponkin,
you do.
You can either listen to his words of wisdom on the classic, the audio, or the New Who reviews, or you could go to Twitter, and he is at Ponkin.
Here's a soundbite of JD singing how you spell that.
P-O-N-K-E-N, Ponkin.
Thanks, JD.
At least you got JD to do it and not the Emperor Dalek.
Yeah.
Goodbye!
Rock on, be rad and excellent to each other. Ciao.
It's been wonderful.
Kablamo! Did you enjoy the show? Then please do what the cosmos compels you to and spread the gospel of who back when. Tell your friends. Don't have any friends? No problemo. Tell some strangers. Like us on Facebook. That's facebook.com/whobackwhen. All in one word. Are you on Google Plus? Then find us on Google Plus. That's plus who back when. And when you do, tell us why you're on Google Plus. Who Back When just got its very own Twitter account, no lie, so give us a follow. You guessed it, that's @WhoBackWhen, all in one word. Check us out on SoundCloud, vote us up on Reddit, listen to us on Stitcher, and head on over to our website, whobackwhen.com, where you can leave a comment, submit a review of your own, and peruse our visual index of aliens, monsters, and more, which increases in kablamos with every episode. And lastly, give us a rating and review on iTunes. Not only would it make us super chuffed, and it really, really would, but as thanks, we will transmigrate your iTunes nom de plume into the credit list of trailers for fake Doctor Who audiobooks produced by Who Back When. Have a poke around our bonus episodes to make more sense of that. That's it. Rock on and be rad and excellent to each other. Catch your earballs in our next Classic Who Review, New Who Review, or, still funny, Audio Who Review. Ciao.
Who Back When?